Welcome to the world of thoroughbred racing on the Equisport Radio Network.
Allidare's got a lead. Allidare put ahead in front, right in the middle of the stretch. It's Allidare and Affirm battling back along the inside. We'll test these two to the wire. Affirm under a left-hand whip. Allidare on the outside driving. Affirm and Allidare heads apart. Affirm's got a nose in front as they come onto the wire.
Join our host, Les Salzman, and his team as they go behind the scene to cover the inside stories and history of the international racing scene.
And down the stretch they come. On the outside, it's Sunday Silence. Easy Goer with Pat Day. Back to Challenge. Heads apart. Easy Goer on the inside with a slight lead. On the outside, Sunday Silence. The rest of them far back. Here's the finish of the Preakness. Sunday Silence and Easy Goer. Photo finish. Noses apart.
Get ready for some great interviews and fast-paced action.
She's starting to pick them off, though. Zenyatta going to hook to the outside. Meanwhile, it's Colonel John. Summer Bird in the red cap. And Zenyatta's come to the outside. Zenyatta coming flying on the grandstand side. Gio Ponti on the inside. Summer Bird is right there. This is unbelievable! Zenyatta! What a performance! One we'll never forget!
And now, your host, Les Salzman.
Thanks, Doug. This is Les Salzman, and we're at the finish line here at Sunshine Meadows Training Center in beautiful Delray Beach, Florida, for the initial broadcast of the International Equine Network. And with me today is Scott Miller, who came up with the concept and is the founder of the network, and Steve Wolf, who has been part of it from the very, very start. Scott, welcome aboard, and congratulations on your first broadcast.
Thank you very much, Les. I'm glad to be here. Glad to have you and Steve around me and have BBS on board with us. We have nothing but success ahead of us.
I'm sure we will. Scott, tell me, how did you come up with the idea?
To be honest with you, Les, I was riding in the back of a horse van from track to track in the thoroughbred business, and I always wanted to know what was going on everywhere. And so as time went on, I said, you know, at the wire, be a good thoroughbred show. Then I thought about standardbreds. I said Flying Turns would be a good show. And that's how all these different programs came up, riding in the back of a horse van.
You know, sometimes those of us that are in the sport, some of our best thinking is when we're in the horse van, either driving it or being back there or whatever. When the cell phone's off and you can kind of think and get your thoughts together. Now, you've been in the business for pretty much all your life.
43 years.
43 years. And tell us a little bit about some of the things you've done.
Well, I grew up on a farm, and I was delivering hay to Churchill. And I got a job hot walking horses for Dewey Smith and learned as much as I could there. And then I went to work for Shug McGahee and then B. Wayne Lucas and ended up at One Star Farm. And so I've been well-rounded around top-notch people. And, you know, I just kind of took it from there. Walked horses, cleaned stalls, trained horses. Couldn't train a rat to eat cheese, but I trained horses.
Well, you know, that's one of the things that makes this whole network a little bit different than some of the other things that are on the air, is the fact that just about everybody involved has been involved with horses from the bottom up. You know, we've all done stalls, pick feet, all that kind of stuff. And so we understand it. But the other part of it, and I know you for a number of years, and I know Steve for a number of years, there's a real passion. And when we sat down and looked at some of the broadcasting concepts, that passion became very, very, very evident. Tell me a little bit about the programming that you have planned.
Well, the programming we have, we got 10 different programs, actually. Flying Turns is about the standardbred industry, and that's why Steve's on board. He's a Hall of Fame writer from the harness industry, knows it inside and out, traveled all over the world with it. You know, so that was a good thing for us right there. We can't get any better than that. Yourself at the wire with the thoroughbreds, you've been there and done that, you know, and then with myself, I've been exposed to a lot of the show horse industry. We have a show called Quest for Equine Gold. It's about the show horse industry and how they get to the Olympics, how they get to world championships. We have Quarter Time, which is about the AQHA industry, how they go to take cow ponies and become, you know, champions. Then we have Last Call. It's a live broadcast of horse auctions of all breeds. You know, which is good.
You know, that's disappointing to me. I got to tell you that when I saw Last Call, I thought we would at least get a couple of shots of bourbon out of that. It seems like, oh man, but.
Fine.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. You set me up for that, Scott.
That's one of the things that I had a hard habit breaking with that Last Call, getting that hand up in the air. And you also do that at the auctions, too.
That's it.
You know, you want to get that hand up in the air for the Last Call. And one of the things about that program, Steve will probably talk about, is they just sold a standard bred for $1.1 million at the Lexington sales, and that's the richest or most expensive standard bred ever sold. You know, and so all of our programs are going to be broadcast in a format that the average person can, you know, watch or listen to. You know, you don't have to be a horseman to be entertained by us.
And I think one of the things that really is, again, unusual is the cross-pollination of all the different disciplines in one location.
Right.
You created a website. Tell us about the website, because that's completely unique.
It's IENTV.org, and it goes. We have a section for each one of our programs, and it highlights about what we're going to be doing now on that show that weekend. For example, we have the Champagne Stakes and the Breeder Futurity coming up on At the Wire and this Saturday, and that's a key race towards the Kentucky Derby, and you know, it's going to be exciting. On the website that you can see all the disciplines that we're talking about, and you actually can see, you know, video and program. And we also have on there for the family, a family movie every week. You know, so that's what, you know.
That's great. That's so unusual in the sport, because so many people start focusing their attention at that person that's maybe 21, 25, 30 years old. But the future of the business is getting those little weanlings
right
in the picture.
Exactly. And that's the whole long and short of it, is to get the kids involved. And, you know, the program that we have now, you know, grandma can watch it and understand it. Little kids can watch it and understand it. And that's what we're trying to do with the program, and getting it behind the scenes. And, you know, these people, you see them for a few minutes on TV at the finish line, but you don't see how they get there. You know, and that's what we're going to do. We're going to show how they get there, and then it's not just, you know, that few minutes of fame.
You're going to be focusing on the hard work and the trail that gets there. That must take a lot of work on your end.
Oh, it sure does, you know. But one thing that helps is having you and Steve around, because you can cut a lot of trails for me. And being exposed to everything in the business, I kind of know how to get there.
Tell me, what is the time frame for getting things up and running?
Well, right now, today is a big moment, because Steve and I did a show in Freehold, New Jersey, where Steve was working, and we did a show called Flying Terms, and Steve was instrumental in getting that done, and they were trying to get simulcasting over to Europe and different places, and they were way ahead of the game, and so that was the foundation that got me going into this project.
And so that was that period of time when New Jersey standardbred racing was at its pinnacle.
Oh, you got that right.
And you had places like Freehold in the Meadowlands doing things that other tracks weren't, as far as simulcasting. And right. I guess, is that where you and Steve kind of got hooked into the electronic media?
Exactly. And we kept moving it on, and Steve was so far ahead of the game, you know, at that time, you know, that it just really, you know, sent me down the road, you know, real quick. And so I applied that to all the different disciplines. And then, and over the last few years, talking to the people at USEF and FEI and at USTA the thoroughbreds, HUHA, everybody has agreed to help us in the project because their main goal is distribution. You have to get out your product out there. And with us, you don't have to buy a lot of time with us or any at all. You just send us your videos and we'll get it out there.
And it's a non-subscription type of website, so the casual viewer, no matter what discipline,
right,
can just pop on to the IEN website and actually watch the video of their choice.
Exactly. They can do that. They just pop right onto it. And I also encourage them to send us videos of their own equestrian endeavors, especially if they've got a small one-horse stable. We would gladly put that on our network.
So there'll be lots of content, not only just races and the typical things people see, but more of what this is all about.
Exactly. In fact, I got one show that I really do like. It's called Chuck Wagon. And it answers the question to how the equestrians eat at the different places. In Kentucky, you have Kentucky Burgoo at the Derby. In Maryland, you have the crab cakes, at all the horse shows and horse races. So we're going to nail down some of these celebrity riders, and we're going to force them to cook for us and see who has the best.
But I'm hoping that you're talking about riders from the show world.
Right.
Because if you were talking about jockeys, you'd have three raisins and a nut, right? So we can't count on them. But, it's funny because in the harness racing industry, there's a site on Facebook, Harness Racing Foodies.
Uh-huh.
And I got to tell you, between their stuff and the thoroughbred announcer Frank Miramonte's pizza stuff, I have gained 13 pounds just vicariously looking at it.
Right.
Am I going to get the same effect from Chuck Wagon?
That you will, because once this project is going, we intend to travel the country in a Keystone Montana RV. This is an excellent one for the horsemen, and it's the most popular selling RV in the country at this time. And it's going to be interesting because I'm going to grab a hold of Bobby Flay and tell him we got some equestrians that can out-cook him. And Bobby owns a lot of horses in the thoroughbred industry, and he has a few show horses. And so we're gonna put him to the test and see if he really is as good as they say he is.
The amazing thing about Bobby Flay, I saw him on TV the other day, right? This is a guy that cooks food all the time. And Gordon Ramsay, he's kind of heavy set and everything. Bobby Flay looks like he should eat something, right? He's a thin guy, a healthy guy. So it would be kind of interesting to get him to be cooking against the athletes that we have, the equestrian athletes, and that would be an interesting show.
Exactly. And it's going to go from trainers and owners down to, jockeys and grooms. It's not going to be just, the star of the show horse industry or the thoroughbred industry. It's going to be regular people, just like the people that are listening to our program.
Well, the three of us go back a number of years, so we go back to those old-time racetrack kitchens.
Exactly.
Okay, and the food was good. I think they were responsible for more coronary artery disease than any single unit in the history of the world, but it tasted awfully good. So are we going to get that kind of cooking, too?
You got that right, because the horse industry, they knew about bacon before bacon was bacon.
They were making bacon before it was bacon,
right? You got that right.
Scott, thanks for the overview. We're going to take a little break. Then we're going to get Steve on to talk about flying turns and all the exciting things that are happening in the standardbred industry. And we'll be right back.
Thank you.
On the International Equine Network. And we're here at Sunshine Meadows Training Center in Delray Beach, Florida. We're on the International Equine Network, and with me is our standardbred expert, Steve Wolf, a Hall of Famer as far as his writing is concerned, involved in public relations for years and years and years, even back into Mike Raschke era, right?
That's right. it's been a great, great career that I don't know how it came about, but actually I was born and raised on a dairy farm in New Jersey.
Where in New Jersey?
In a town called Flemington, New Jersey.
I know Flemington well.
Which has a great background in harness racing, which I learned later. A gentleman by the name of, he was called the Jersey Skeeter. And now I'm at a loss. Tom Berry.
Okay. There you go. Good memory.
Four-time Hamiltonian winner. He actually had his stables there at the races at the fairgrounds. And to this day, it's a historical land site that he was there. And because of his four Hamiltonian wins, plus he was one of the first ones to keep astute records of horses' shoe size and toe weights, and which a lot of people in the business today don't even know what they are.
Very, very true.
And how fun they were to put on the horses. But it's great history, and we're going to bring that all up here. I mean, I knew about harness racing. I'd been to the harness races, but it wasn't until the Meadowlands Open that my father, who was also a real estate broker, got talked into buying a racehorse. And so I went up to see this thing, and he looked pretty good. And about 3 weeks later, we're told, it's about 1977 to age myself, that we're going to race in the Meadowlands. So I was in college. I drove all the way up to the Meadowlands, saw the trainer, found out about this horse racing, and sure enough, he won. And boy, I thought this game was easy, and it drew me right into it.
You know, that's the worst curse an owner or a trainer could have, is winning your first start, right? Because you get hooked.
Yeah, it was, and the horse paid well. We had the exacta, we had the trifecta. I think I turned $50 into $400, and I thought it was an easy game. And so did my father. And the next thing you know, we're buying trotting mares, and we get our first homebred, and eventually turned the farm from beef cattle at that point, we had stopped milking, to standardbred broodmare. And over the course of the years, over 30 years, we bred, raised, and owned and raced over 300 horses, owned three stallions, and did pretty well in the New Jersey Sire Stakes and then the New York Sire Stakes. It was it's a great career. And during this time, I started working at the racetracks. I mean, I walked in cold to Liberty Bell Park, told them I wanted to work in publicity. They said, write a couple stories. I did. And on opening night, they hired me full time. So,
it's been upward and onward from there. Tell us a little bit about the horses that you and your dad had.
Well, going back early, we were in a syndicate with two doctor friends of my father's. And we bought a first racehorse was Rockville Paul. He was a pacer. He was a claimer. He was a 10,000 claimer who in 9 weeks had 5 wins, 2 seconds, and we lost him in 40,000 claimers to the Meadowlands. So that was, our first, couple months. You know, I think we split probably around $100,000 by the time we were done with him. So, but my father, gung-ho, sunk it all back in. Then we bought a broodmare by the name of Elvita Hanover, who was well-bred, in foal, the most happy fella, and sadly she lost that foal. But in those days, it was free return breeding. If that happens, it's aborted. We went back to her again. We had a beautiful colt. In fact, he ended up being one of the sale toppers at Harrisburg that year. And what happened was, on the flip of a coin, he was either going to be Wolf's Doc because of the two doctors, or Doc's fella. And we lost the corn twice. He ended up being Doc's fella. We ended up selling him, I think, for almost $100,000, which back in the late 70s was pretty good for a yearling compared to the $1.1 million just sold in Lexington. But Rockville Paul went on to become one of the greatest pacers ever in Roosevelt Raceway history. And the Breeders' Awards was phenomenal. He didn't race at two, but back then, they had, for older horses, the breeders, continued. And he was a great, great start. Other top horses we had include, at that point, we also, with the selling of this colt and then the mother, we switched to trotters exclusively. And then we ended up purchasing a great mare by the name of Drop Stitch, who became an invitational mare. She ended up winning, was the New York Sire Stakes champion. We had some great success with her. Another hard-hitting mare was Micron. We sold one Sire Stakes horse by the name of Wolf's Daigle, who went on to win over $500,000 in Europe, and a host. I mean, at one point we owned Idle Love and raced her a little bit, and then bred her, and her first foal I think brought $35,000-$40,000 and had made it. And we had some other decent raceway mares that had, you know, done well, and we started breeding them because we owned at the time Kawatha Mon Ami, and then we owned Agogo Lomont, and then a great yearling, the top yearling seller, Waves of Laughter, who I changed the name to Majestic Victory because he was a Valley Victory. He was magnificent, and then we stood him in New York, you know, for a few more years. So in between working at Freehold and then, or for the Horsemen's Association, the SBOA in New Jersey, then Freehold Raceway, you know, I was there for almost 15 years. And then off the Pompano for 10 years, it's been an exciting career.
You know, it's an amazing thing because here you are, a kid in college, probably never really thought that you were going to be in the horse business. And here it is 40 years later, and you can't get out.
No. My first job from school was for the Newark Star-Ledger. So I wanted to be a sports writer. But the racing was there. Only people like Ray Brienza and Dick Carmody and, at the time, Carol Hodes and all these great handicappers and writers were employed by the Star-Ledger. And they kept telling me, you have no chance of getting in. You're not going to keep doing college sports and help death notices and obituaries, which sort of soured me up after a year. And that forced me to go out on my own. And then I started working as a groom for Lena Lobel Farm. In fact, I was handling at one point taking care of Speedy Somali and Oil Burner, and working with some of the greatest people, Dominic Santarelli.
Dr. Seedlip.
Of course, Alan Levitt, who was a little crazy, but I can appreciate it. But the blacksmith, Peck, Harry Peck,
yep,
who was one of the great ones, I learned a lot from him. And because, you know, we were putting horses on the treadmill and you know, working.
You were a decade ahead of yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was great. It was a great operation. And we never really spoke about it, but actually we joint ventured with Lana Lobel with the Harris sale.
Yes.
We were American Harness bred.
Yep. I was walking on $1 million in shredded cash.
Yep, we
walk in, pick up a little piece here, and say, "Oh, this was a $50 bill."
We got that money from the Philadelphia Mint, and we had it brought down in a truck, and it was already shredded, and we put it down on the show ring, and everybody was like, "Where'd you get that?" The thing about the racetrack crowd and the casino crowd meeting together, we had seven guys in the ring trying to paste the dollars to back together again. Now I'm only getting it.
I was there. It was a great, great experience. I mean, I learned how to do horses properly for a yearling show. You learned that at Lana Lobel, even with, you know, if Alan was on his pony with Maracas chasing us as we were ponying him up and down. But a lot of great people came there to look at those yearlings. And the idea for the Harris sale was brilliant. And Benny Webster winning at the table games and buying with his partner buying a flack bait. It was a yearling.
Exactly.
You know, 51,000, I think, he brought. What he turned out to be was great. It's just, I've been very, very fortunate. And, you know, I've loved doing promotions. I like trying to draw family fun days, having the rodeo at the track on the off season, having bringing the guy from Australia that did the fireworks stunt show, the Vincent Silvestro, you know, having the New Jersey State chili cook-off, 5,000 people coming for the races in the sample chili, and having a country western hoedown at the track. These were all things that I thrived on over the years and loved doing. And I'm fortunate that I'm still in the sport and traveling and going all about. In fact, this year for the first time in January, I'm off to France for the.
And you'll be reporting for us out there, right?
Yes. Oh, I'm sure about that. I think Harness Link, who I work for, is paying the bill. We'll probably argue about that, but no, of course
we'll steal their signal anyhow. Don't worry about it. Scott's very good at that.
It's all great, and the horse racing around the world through the internet, we can now bring it all to you. We're going to have an interview with a 19-year-old kid from Bermuda. People don't even realize that Bermuda has harness racing. They're standard bred ponies, but this young man by the name of Kiwan Waldron spent the summer in Quebec, where he got his license, and the other day at the Fair Championships at the Hippodrome 3R in Quebec, he won 4 of the 12 races and finished 2nd and 3rd. He had a UDR of nearly 700 for the season, and this young man has wonderful hands, and we're going to hear from him.
For some of the folks that aren't familiar with standard bred racing, explain to them what a UDR is.
I'm sorry, a UDR, Universal Driving Rating. It is the it's exactly what in baseball you'd call a batting average. And they have it for trainers, you know, to see what their winning percentage is. They have it for drivers. And it's an important handicapping fact when you're looking for that, you know, that difference on why you're going to pick one over the other. And you see, whoa, this guy's got a UDR of over, you know, 350. In baseball, he'd be king. Well, he's a pretty good driver.
You know, you mentioned the visibility of the sport. Every morning lately, I've been waking up to TVG broadcasting racing from Sweden, standardbred racing from Sweden. And it's kind of cool because yesterday they had an undertax standardbred race. And you would think that maybe they would have a handful of entries. They had 15 in there. So the sport is flourishing. Now, this week we had one of our first million-dollar yearlings in the standardbred industry. Tell me a little bit about what happened.
The talk was all about a colt by Muscle Hill, who was in the sale. He was a full brother to a trotter by the name of Greenshoe, who's a three-year-old this year. He was second in the Hamiltonian. And just prior to the sale date, Greenshoe had set a track record, stakes record, in winning the Bluegrass at the Red Mile in 1:50 and 1, I believe, which is a sensational mile, and he's even gone faster than that. He's been sensational, million-dollar winner, and now here comes his full brother up in the sale ring, and it jumped almost immediately to 500,000, and then it started, the next thing you know, it's 600, 650, 700, 800,000. We figure, well, here comes the ceiling. Well, there was no ceiling until 1.1 million, the first standardbred ever to be over $1 million. And then later that night, a Father Patrick colt, another one well bred and superb looking in the ring too, bought $1 million.
And so you had 2 7-figure yearlings at the same sale. And from my understanding, there's a lot of international money. Right there.
Yes, the second horse, that the one that sold for $1 million, he was purchased by Aki Swanstead and his connections in Sweden and throughout Europe. People have to understand that harness racing is throughout the world: Australia, New Zealand, Tasmania, South Africa, throughout most of the European nations. France is probably the number one. One of the top countries in the world for harness racing, more than thoroughbred racing. And they bet millions of dollars are wagered on their cards, on their races every week. And of course, Sweden is very, very big. You know, there's probably 3 or 4 great races in the world. And I know 2 of them for sure, the Prix de Mérite in France and the Elite Lop in Stockholm, Sweden, are 2 of the top 4 races in all of harness racing. I mean, the Hamiltonian has to be number one. And then next week at Yonkers Raceway, talk about opportunities for horse people get into syndicates and stuff, is the $1 million Yonkers International Trot, where the best trotters in the world are going to converge at Yonkers Raceway. They're going a mile and a quarter for a purse of $1 million.
you know, the amazing thing about that, Steve, is if 15 years ago you said to me they were going to have a $1 million race at Yonkers, I would have had you institutionalized immediately, right? Because
it
was on the skid. And then the racetrack recovered and has done great as a result of the casino, the Empire City Casino. You're going to be talking a lot about that kind of stuff on Flying Turns.
Every week.
And, you know, we'll have a lot of race calls and things like that. Maybe we get lucky and do Freehold and get Larry Letterman on
there. You go.
Larry's back.
One day. That would
That's
be
my guy.
We have so much to cover. There's not only just the men in the sport, there's also the women in the sport, and they're making a big impact.
They really are emerging,
when
aren't they?
When you look in the Monty races, the under saddle races that you see racing for hundreds of thousands of dollars, it's mostly women jockeys now. Yeah, Eric Raffin's probably the best one of them all, but there's other women out there, both throughout Europe and stuff. And here in America, we have some women that can ride and can drive too.
And I have a feeling you're going to get them on the show as well.
They're going to be on the show too, and we're going to have other national reporters. We're going to have handicappers. We're going to cover all the facets within the harness racing industry, and all done on Flying Turns.
It's going to be exciting. And we're going to take a quick break, if that's okay with you. And we'll be back with Scott, and we're going to talk a little thoroughbred racing after that. International Equine Network. And we're back in sunny South Florida at Sunshine Meadows Training Center in beautiful Del Rey. This is Les Salzman on the air with the initial broadcast of the International Equine Network. You just heard from Steve Wolf talking about our exciting program, Flying Turns. And now we're bringing back Scott. He recovered from the first part of the show, and he did so without drinking an awful lot. And he'll be back here talking to us about the thoroughbred aspect of it. What's the name of that show?
It's called At the Wire. And what we're doing is we're going to go to all the areas of the thoroughbred industry, from the breeding and transportation and, you know, of course, the racing end of it. But more importantly, with At the Wire, it's going to be a running program of how they get to the Kentucky Derby. And for example, this Saturday from Belmont Park, you'll be able to see the Champagne Stakes for two-year-olds. And it's a point getter for the Kentucky Derby. And then from Keeneland on Saturday, you're going to be able to see the Champagne Stakes, the Claiborne Champagne Breeders Futurity that we'll be seeing from Keeneland. And so, you know, you'll be able to start following the Derby every Saturday, you know, and build up to that big first Saturday in May. But one of the things that I'm going to take out of At the Wire is a documentary called How They Get There. And you're going to see in that documentary horses, how they transport them on airplanes and vans and trucks. You're going to see how they get shoes. You're going to see how they're fed. You know, who's buying what horses. You know, just the whole thoroughbred life on the backside. You know, you're going to talk, we're going to talk to grooms and owners, jockeys and exercise riders. And then that's going to be for national broadcast in May, the 1st of May.
So if I on the road and I can't pull up the races on TV, I could go onto my phone or my laptop or tablet and go to
IENTV.org
and watch the races.
Yes.
And you're going to have the airing times posted on there so people will know what time to tune in.
There'll be the airing time that'll take you directly to the track. You'll be able to watch the races live. And we're doing the same thing with our show horses and our quarter horses and our standard breds. And everything that we're talking about here will have a link to where you can watch those events live.
So that's great. So this becomes a hub for people that or on the go.
You got that.
Okay,
right.
So this is truly a 2019 type of deal.
Yes, it is.
Okay. Let's talk about what's going on in thoroughbred racing right now, because we're coming out of the yearling sales. They were pretty good, particularly at the top end. And there seems to be a lot of momentum. What do you think?
Well, you're seeing a lot of new money, and the thoroughbred business has been supported by old money for a long time. But now you're starting to see new money from younger people coming in. And it's exciting because their enthusiasm they're bringing has generated a lot more excitement at the racetrack.
It's interesting to watch the racetrack promos. I think, you know, when you're watching the demographic of the commercial is very, very young.
Yes, it is. And what I like about it is they're always promoting at the Derby, at the all the racetrack. They have a Saturday and they dress up and they, you know, it gives you a place to go, things to do. Some of those commercials are so good, I even got me a pink hat with feathers in it.
Yeah, and I wish you didn't wear it today. But that's a whole different story. The Derby is coming up. You know, it gets sneaky, right? Because all of a sudden, you know, we get to the Breeders' Cup, which is less than a month away, and then everybody starts focusing on the Derby.
Right.
You figured that you wanted to start a little bit early on the road to the Derby and catch some of these horses, especially these young horses that are racing at a distance of ground.
Yes. The one horse that I'm looking at, and I used to work for Wayne Lucas. Mr. Lucas is one of the greatest persons in the world, and he's a great trainer. He's got a horse coming up, that's running in Keeneland at the Claiborne Breeders Futurity, American Butterfly. It's a 2-year-old colt, and this horse is showing some real promise. And I think that this horse, and the way Wayne will bring him along, you'll see this horse do real well. In fact, I think he might be looking towards the Arkansas Derby within the spring.
Well, and that's a route that Wayne likes to go.
Yes,
he loves to use that Arkansas Derby.
Yes, it is. And what I like about the Arkansas Derby, it's the last big race before the Kentucky Derby.
And that's kind of consistent with his training philosophy, right?
Yeah.
You know, he gets them there, gets them nice and tight, and he doesn't have to do quite as much with them to get them into the Derby starting gate.
You're exactly right. And Wayne loves our Hot Springs. They do very well coming out of there. And the weather's usually pretty good there. And that's what a lot of people don't understand about the Derby. When you're training for the Derby, you got to think about where you're going to race in the weather.
No, and I think you're 100% right. And we're South Florida guys, so we're going to say that South Florida's best for everything in the world. But the reality is, as a horseman, I always thought that Hot Springs was better for the horses than here. Matter of fact, even Louisiana, because there it's cool in the evening and warm in the day.
Right.
And so the horse gets to relax at night in a cooler environment, get freshened, and go forward instead of having heat all the time.
Well, you know, the thing of it is you have to look at the fluctuation of the temperatures wherever you're training at. Some places you'll have 20 or 30 degree temperature change from night to morning, you know, and when they come out in that cool weather, they're fired up, they're ready to go, and then they get a nice warm afternoon. Here in Florida and California, temperatures are, you know, pretty much the same all the time.
Yeah, it's true. And I think, you know, if you look at horses that, for example, are stabled at Saratoga, okay, and then they come down here for the winter meet, the first couple of weeks, they're really firing because they're so fresh.
Yeah.
And then as they settle and climatize, they change a little bit.
Yes, yes. You know, it's great when they come down from Saratoga because, you know, Saratoga is one of the best places in the world to summer a horse at. You know, and it's Florida. You know, and so when you get down here, a lot of trainers find out what kind of horse they really have when they get down here.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think you can unwrap them a little bit here and see what's underneath, especially with the two-year-olds coming three. You've seen it over the years, especially working for Wayne and Shug. You know, a horse this time of year is going to be a completely different individual come the spring.
Right. You're exactly right. And just to give you a good example of one of the horses, Barkley Tag has a horse called Tis the Law. He's a New York bred, and he's running Saturday at Belmont Park. In the Champagne, and it's going to be interesting because Barkley's the winner's down here, and this could be another funny side. This horse is really nice. He's New York bred, and I'm excited about seeing that horse. And the great thing about it is we can watch a lot of these Derby horses, you know, from now until the week before the Derby.
It's true. And, you know, we get to go to places like Palm Meadows, Palm Beach Downs,
right,
and Gulfstream. And you're looking at these horses, and it is kind of fun to watch them get ready. And you had a hands-on view of Always Dreaming.
Right. Well, you know, it was kind of nice out of Palm Beach Downs. We had Always Dreaming over there, which was really nice to see him come along. And I also work here at Sunshine Meadows. We had the Hamiltonian winner here, 2 years ago. It was really nice having her here. Yeah, we got a horse named McWicked that was here for Casey Coleman. Yeah, and so, it's really good for us here to see these horses.
Now, there's no shortage of good horses, and then, of course, we have the two-year-old sales and all that stuff.
Right.
And we'll be there for everything going on, as well as across the country. You've got stringers working with the network at all the key places.
Exactly. And, you know, one thing good about the website is, like, right now we have the Lexington sale going on where they just sold a standard bred for $1.1 million. If you go to my website, IENTV.org, you can watch those sales live, you know. And then on the other hand, we have the thoroughbreds on there, and it's Keeneland sales coming up next week.
Well, we just finished Keeneland, right, and now we're going to go
right
to OBS.
Right. We'll have that. So it's going to be exciting. What I like about what we're doing is you guys can jump on board with us, all our listeners and viewers, and take the ride with us to Churchill, take the ride with us to the Hamiltonian, to the Olympics, you know, and it's right there, you know, at your laptop.
So we're going basically from the barn to the starting gate, and then after the race, we're going to have some excellent coverage as well.
Right. And, you know, one of the things that I learned in the business, you got to look at it all and go for it. But the thing that I like is it's not if you win or lose your races. It's the journey that gets you there. And that's what you'll remember about the horse business more so than the win.
Most of the time, unless you have to pay the feed man, then you have to worry about the win. But
that's true.
And again, that's part of what we're going to try and get across to the public is all the different things that go on, but also some of the pressures and some of the pleasures that we get with the sport. You know, a lot of times when people are watching TV, they see the winner's circle and everybody's jumping up and down and throwing their hats and doing all kinds of goofy stuff, but they don't necessarily see what goes on at the racetrack at 10:30 in the morning in the trainer's office.
Exactly.
And we want to try and, I think, bring that kind of information and understanding to the public to know all the stuff that goes on, because it ain't just easy.
Yeah, you know, the funny part about it is I had people tell me, oh, you're so lucky to be in the Kentucky Derby. And I've been in many of them for the people that I work for, but the problem is I didn't get to see them because you're working with them and, you don't get to participate other than, you know, that 2 minutes that you're there because you're so focused on it.
You are, but, you know, you bring up a very good point. You know, you don't necessarily, matter of fact, most of the time when a trainer or a groom is running a horse, you may see some of the race and whatever, but you're not really focused on that because you're focused on what you're going to do after the race to make that horse comfortable.
Oh, okay.
and to get everything done properly for the horse. And what you're trying to do with some of your series to show the tenderness and caring that the people working in the barn actually have for these animals.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting. I've flown a lot of horses to Hong Kong and to Europe from the state, and it's universal. I got to thinking about this with a mare called Epitombe from South Africa. She heard Swahili, she heard Arabic, she heard Japanese, and she heard English. So I got to thinking one day, you know, no matter what language you speak, the care is the same anywhere. You know, those grooms care just about in South Africa just as we do here in the States or Japan or anywhere else. So, you know, it's an interesting life, and we're going to try to bring that to the listeners and to the viewers.
And hopefully you folks stay with us and enjoy it. This is, again, our initial episode, and there's going to be many, many, many more. I want to thank Scott and Steve and our production crew over at BBS. And if you have friends that have missed the actual live broadcast, the stream of it, the archive of it, will be available on the IEN Network website in about 3 hours or 4 hours. We'll put a little pressure on poor old Doug there in California. Again, thank you for joining us. Scott, give them the website one more time.
It's IENTV.org.
IENTV.org for all your equestrian needs. Thanks a lot, and we'll speak with you next week.